It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Hi there, and welcome to Baseball by Design. I am sportslogos.net minor league baseball correspondent Paul Caputo, broadcasting live, as always, from the Sunday Helmet Hall of Fame in my basement in Fort Collins, Colorado. Today, we're going to be talking about the independent professional New England Knockouts, who play in the Frontier League in Brockton, Massachusetts. They have been in the news a little bit this offseason, not just because of their newly unveiled brand, but because they unveiled a brand, a nickname, the Chowderheads, which was ditched after it was poorly received. And so this is a new brand for this franchise, which will start in 2024. They share a ballpark with the Brockton Rocks, a collegiate summer-level team, and we'll get into that a little bit in this episode. Later on in this episode, I'll be speaking with designer Grant Odell, who created the brand, and of course, Dan Simon will be here with one of his Studio Simon stumpers. Right now, I am so pleased to be speaking with Paul Baker, who is not only the announcer for the New England Knockouts, but the co-host, of the Stadium Journey podcast with Mark Viquez. Paul, first of all, congratulations on having an excellent first name.
Yes, but you know, you can never have too many Pauls around.
I don't know. I think that depends on who you ask. You may get some folks who disagree with that. So Paul, you're the announcer for the Knockouts, and this is this is fun for me to talk to you. We were chatting before we got started here. I associate boxing very closely with like the announcing of boxing, right? Like it's the sport of boxing, but it's also the pomp and circumstance. And I think that the announcing is part of that. So you get to be the announcer for a team that to me feels heavily focused on announcing. Is that something that you will be working into your gig this summer?
You know, I hadn't put two and two together and come up with 22 before you just said that when we were chatting. So you think of Michael Buffer, who just made a total fortune for himself, made a celebrity for himself out of, you know, the Are You Ready to Rumble thing. So yeah, boxing. I was thinking of the Rocky movies when you mentioned that, actually.
And oh yeah.
Kind of more of the same. So yeah, we're definitely going to have to incorporate a lot of that into our game day presentation once we get going. I assume, you know, we haven't spoken yet. The season starts for us in about 50 days or so, give or take. And so we haven't had any production meetings or anything like that, but I assume we're going to have, like, you know, the ring bell going on. I'm sure the mascot's going to be walking around with inning cards or something like that at some point. So we'll see what happens, but that's a great idea.
There's a lot of fun stuff you can do with boxing, obviously, as a visual identity. But I wanted to get, you know, straight from your words here, straight from your mouth. Why is a baseball team based in Brockton, Massachusetts? Why is it appropriate for that team to be named or to have an identity founded in boxing?
Basically, because of its two most famous residents are Rocky Marciano and Marvelous Marvin Hagler. Both legendary boxers in their own right. So Brockton has been known as the City of Champions. I don't know if it's because of those two individuals or if it's for something else, but when I think of Brockton, if you ask me to name who's somebody famous from Brockton, those are really the only two people I can name. So
now, what will your role be, you know, in terms of the announcing? Will you do anything differently? Because I know that you do announcing for other teams. Will you do anything different for a team that has this boxing theme?
Well, I've actually done the team that's presently playing in Brockton and the predecessor of the Knockouts, the Brockton Rocks.
Yeah.
Which was they started off in the Northern League and then went into the Northeast League and the Can-Am League, which is merged into the Frontier League. So it's really an extension of that team. So I figure I'm going to carry along a lot of the stuff that I do for the Rocks, just bring it over to the professional side now.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. What is the, what's the reaction been like in the community to this new nickname?
Well, it depends on who you ask, because they did the standard contest, the name the team contest, when they were looking to name this team. And they had five choices. One was the Nor'easters, which, for those of you who are not from the New England area, the Jersey area, Nor'easter is a winter storm that we get a couple times a year that comes up the coast and brings with it a lot of wind and rain and snow and ice and all kinds of fun stuff. So that was one of the choices. The Chowderheads was another choice.
Uh-huh.
And the Chowderheads, spelled in the New England way with the A-H instead of an E-R. So yeah. It's the Chowderheads. That was actually the winner of the fan vote. But when they announced it, it really got a poor reception. So they reversed course. And I don't know if this was their plan all along. I'm not privy to those kind of meetings, whether it was a way to get a little bit of, know, shine the spotlight on the team and the new pro team and the new name. But they reversed course. They were going to go with Chowderheads, which I kind of liked. It was going to be, as a PA guy, that was going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
When I was, hey, here come the Chowderheads. Or, you know, you could put the Three Stooges up on the screen. Hey, Chowderheads. stuff like that. But they reversed and went with the Knockouts, which I think is the people that I have talked to, it's kind of split. Some say the Knockouts are a lot better. Some people say, you know what, the Chowderheads would have been a lot of fun. But I think the Knockouts was a little bit more traditional. Chowderheads was really kind of far out there. So I think that was the criticism of that name.
Yeah, it's funny when you see this, because these names that feel far out there when you first see them, if you give them a little time, you know, people tend to come around. So I expect that if they had stuck with Chowderheads, folks would have come around, right? Like that's when you look at like the Chihuahuas or the Jumbo Shrimp or the Akron Rubber Ducks or, you know, any of these, like they're ones that all had that reaction at first, like the, what the heck are we looking at here? So
what the heck's a yard goat, right?
What is a yard goat? And I love telling the story of what a yard goat is, yeah. Right? Like that's fun to do. So I'm going to circle back around here to the Knockouts in a moment, but I wanted to ask you, what do you and Mark do on the Stadium Journey podcast? What is it that you, how do you feature the sport of baseball on Stadium Journey?
Well, Mark and I run the podcast for Stadium Journey, along with two other people from the site, Dave Cotney and Dan Colachico. And it's really an offshoot of what we do on the site. So for those of you who aren't familiar with Stadium Journey, it's a sports travel website. So, for example, you know, I'm from Massachusetts. So, for example, you're coming up to Fenway Park to check out a game. You can go to stadiumjourney.com, look up Fenway Park, and it will tell you everything about the ballpark, what you can expect as far as food, fan support, special things, where the best places to park, the best places to sit, so on and so forth. And we have reviews like that of over 2,500 different ballpark stadiums, arenas, gymnasiums from all over the world.
So this was, I'm setting you up here because I wanted to ask you the question. If you were to be giving advice to folks who are on their way to see the New England Knockouts play from a Stadium Journey perspective, where are you going? Where are you sitting? What are you eating? What's the Stadium Journey perspective on the New England Knockouts?
Well, I'm really excited to find out. Because it's tough to tell the story of the Knockouts without telling the story of the Brockton Rocks, mm-hmm. who have been there since they started in 2005 as an independent team. And like I said, the Northern League, the Northeastern League, the Can-Am League, they ended up demoting themselves, if you want to call it a demotion. They went from being a pro team to a summer collegiate league team in 2011, not because they weren't being supported, but because of mismanagement. Mm-hmm. They had an owner, a really dysfunctional ownership group, I guess. And so they went down to summer collegiate ball.
Okay.
The plan was to spend a year or two being a summer team, costs were a lot lower, get their finances all straightened out, get the organization straightened out, go back into the pro ball scene. All right, it's 2024 now. So do the math. 13 years later, they're still playing as a summer college team.
Yeah.
So they went through a series of ownership changes. Each one, I think, was less interested than the previous. Mm-hmm. So each one neglected the team a little more, I think, and neglected the stadium a little more. And it really culminated in 2019. The city of Brockton, who owned the stadium, did an inspection, and it was infested with raccoons.
Oh, no.
So, you know, that was a brilliant chance to call the team the Raccoons or something like that. But so the city was ready to drop the team, but a new ownership group came in, took over. The same ownership group that owns the Windy City Thunderbolts,
okay,
of the Frontier League. So their stated plan was to, along with the city, they partnered up. They were going to invest money, refurbish the stadium, get it up to snuff, get it up to pro level again, get a pro team back in there. That was their stated goal. They were planning to do that for 2023, but It wasn't right. It needed a little too much work. So they couldn't get it in time for 2023. So here we are, 2024. We've got the team in place. So long way around saying, so the Brockton Rocks, they decided it really was, I don't think it was originally the plan to have two teams playing, but they decided to keep the Rocks on and keep them in the Futures League, which is where the Summer Collegiate League team plays. And I'm really glad that they went with the decision to rebrand for the pro team. So now they have the Chowderheads. No, the Knockouts. So.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, you know, in regards to the Rocks, I mean, if you look at, you know, the branding for the team, first of all, kind of interesting that they'd play in Massachusetts and that the branding for the team would emulate the Chicago White Sox rather than the Boston Red Sox, you know, an interesting visual choice there. You're nodding. You're looking pensive as I say that.
Well, because I've never been a fan of that copycat Rocks logo. Actually, I had my hat and I left it upstairs, of course.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, that's okay. Yeah, their original logo I thought was outstanding. It was a baseball with red word mark across it, just saying Rocks. Rocks was a derivative of Red Sox and Rocky Marciano.
Okay.
So they kind of jumbled that together, came up with Rocks. And, you know, and at the beginning, the first year of the Rocks, their logo was actually just this plain ball with the word Rocks. And underneath it said Rocks, R-O-X on top and R-O-C-K-S, like the Rocks rock.
Ah, okay.
It was one of those Mike Vec teams at the beginning.
Okay, yeah.
So the Rocks rock. Then they went to this logo, which I really liked. And it's on the facade of the stadium. It's a baseball with the word Rocks and boxing gloves hanging down.
Yeah, well, like the Red Sox type.
Yes, Red Sox font on the Rocks with the boxing gloves. They went away with that, like you said. They went with the 70s swinging White Sox logo.
Yeah.
I don't know how they got away with that because I don't know. I don't think they were paying the White Sox for that, the use of that. So.
It does look like a pretty direct copy of that old White Sox logo. You know, the reason I bring that up, though, now is because, you know, in addition to advancing from, you know, the amateur level up to the professional level and all these upgrades to the ballpark, you know, part of that story is now you have this highly refined, very specifically local brand that belongs to this community, right? Like, I mean, I know the geographic signifier is New England, but it really is, you know, this whole identity is based around the city of Brockton. And, you know, that must be, and again, we haven't seen this on the field, we haven't seen it in the stands yet, but it must be a positive thing for the city of Brockton to have this team that is uniquely theirs now.
Absolutely. Like I said, when the Rocks were a pro team, they didn't not work because of fan support. The fans were there, and I went there very many times when the stadium was sold out.
Yeah.
4,500 seat stadium, and it was standing room only many, many times. So I think the fans will come back. I think it's going to take a little while, especially with in the area with the Worcester Red Sox. Brockton is fairly close to Pawtucket. You can get there in under a half an hour.
Yeah.
Worcester is a little farther away, not a lot farther away. I mean, it's New England after all. Everything's close together.
Yeah.
So Worcester is about 45 minutes away, I'd say. But the prices in Worcester have really been a sore spot for a lot of fans.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that the Knockouts are going to market themselves as an affordable alternative, both to the teams in Worcester and the team right up the street in Boston, because Boston's only 20 miles away from Worcester. So.
All right, the last thing I'm going to ask you about, Paul, and then I'm going to get you out of here, is I know that you're excited to be announcing some players who are coming up. We don't know, I'm sure, the full roster for the team just yet because we're at the time of this recording a little ways out. So I'm going to ask you, if you wouldn't mind, I'm going to give you just a couple of names from Major League Baseball right now. If you could give us just your best now batting for the New England Knockouts and then these players here, if you're ready.
Ready as I'm going to be.
We'll start all with right. Nolan Arenado.
Now batting for the Knockouts, third baseman, Nolan Arenado.
Very good. Very good.
You know, I always find is like over the course, it takes me a little while to find my best delivery for a player's name. I don't know. Like the Rocks a few years ago had five sons of former major leaguers on their roster. So they had David Ortiz's son, Manny Ramirez, Pedro Martinez's son, Gary Sheffield's son played, and Keith Folk's son all played.
Nice.
So it took me a little while to really figure out, like, what's my favorite way to announce their name. So it's for me anyway, it's a little bit of trial and error. So you know, the way I start off a season saying somebody's name may not be the way I end the season.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm going to give you a couple more chances here, and you may see a theme emerging. This is from a second baseman who played from 2013 to 2016 is Nick Noonan.
Now batting, second baseman, Nick Noonan.
All right, last one.
All I can picture is the movie Airplane.
I know what you're talking about.
When Robert Hayes was sitting in the plane seat, now batting, Pedro Borbón.
Borbón.
Or was it Manny Mota?
It was Manny Mota, but Pedro Borbón was he was involved in that in some way. I forget.
Yeah.
Maybe it was like a pinch-hitting situation.
It was pinch-hitting for Pedro Borbón.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and like I said, the last one here is going to be a shortstop who played in the 70s named Nelson Norman.
I always thought you were going to go with Freddie Pottek for some reason.
I'm trying to find all end names here. The New England Knockouts.
I got you. Look at that. I didn't even pick up on that. Now batting, the shortstop, Nelson Noonan.
That's close. Nelson Norman. It was Nick Noonan and now Nelson Norman.
That's why I always have the lineup card in front of me.
That's a good idea. Paul, this has been a ton of fun. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You've been a good sport about doing that announcing bit there. Where can people find the work that you do? Where can people find you on Twitter and Stadium Journey, all that sort of thing?
Absolutely. First and foremost, Stadium Journey. Check us out. Real easy to find, stadiumjourney.com. All your stadium travel information needs. 2,500 plus different venues from all over the world, not just United States and Canada. We're really proud of that. We've got correspondents all over the world. If you're looking to join the team, we're always looking for good writers too. As for myself, if you want to give me a follow, I'm on Twitter at PuckmanRI.
And I am a follower already, have been for a long time. That's how you and I got to know each other. Such a treat to get to talk to you in person and hear the dulcet tones of the announcer voice. I had no idea until we started chatting here.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Paul. It's been a lot of fun.
All right, we'll see you online, and we'll see you at the New England Knockouts.
Can't wait.
All right, everyone, welcome back. I am so pleased to welcome to Baseball by Design for the very first time, designer Grant Odell. Grant, how are you doing?
Good, Paul. Man, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Grant, this New England Knockouts brand that you designed for this team, it has been a big hit. It's a really terrific logo, and it was fun to see it sort of get a bunch of attention on social media. I'll just start right in with some basics here. What were your considerations going into this project? Like, what were you trying to accomplish from a design perspective?
Yeah, good question. It kind of evolved over time, right? We started out with the Name the Team contest. You know, I started out working with the team with a placeholder logo, just professional baseball's come in New England. I kind of started that process with that logo. And then there was a Name the Team contest, and it landed on Chowderheads. So it's going to be the New England Chowderheads. And we actually started the creative process there. And so I was neck deep in Chowderheads branding for a little while until the team made the shift. There was some, I wouldn't call it backlash on social media, but certainly some pushback. You know, I think one of the things, and this will directly answer your question, when you think about considerations, is where on the spectrum of kind of serious versus goofy do you want to fall, especially in minor league baseball, right? Or collegiate, you know, wood bat baseball. Do you want to go all the way to Dairy Daddies? Or do you want to stay down here where it's like real serious when you think about like Durham Bulls and things like that, right?
Right. It used to be the end of that scale was the New Orleans Baby Cakes. I'm glad to see that the Danville Dairy Daddies are the new standard bearer for the goofy, wacky logo.
It's got to be. Yeah, it's got to be. So I think maybe it's just a part of just the geographical region of Brockton where the team's located. It's a little more, you know, thinking about Brockton being the city of champions, and there's this sort of boxing culture there. It's a little more serious. It's a little more industrial. And I think Chowderheads works for the broader, you know, on the goofier end of the spectrum for the broader region of New England. It's, you know, New England clam chowder, all that stuff, right? But I just don't know that fans were resonating with it in a way that the team had hoped. And so it made a ton of sense to just go to one of the other really well-loved names in the Name the Team contest, which was the Knockouts. because of that boxing culture. And so because of that pushback on the Chowderheads brand, I was like, okay, where do we take this then from a creative standpoint? Do I want to really push the envelope? And you know, while the name is a little more serious and a little more tied to the actual city, do I want to get a little goofy with it? Or do I want to, you know, take it really literal and go with like a very direct boxing route? And so we landed somewhere in the middle. You didn't want to take away all of the, not to say there's not joy in overly serious sports brands, but we're trying to get, you know, families to come see college players come play baseball, right? And so let's take it a little more goofy, which is where the Bulldog came into play, things like that. So I think that was the biggest consideration, was where do we want to fall on that spectrum?
So this Bulldog, he's a Bulldog with a, he's got his hat on backwards, kind of, yeah, a Carolina blue, I guess. I mean, I guess that blue is a lot of places, right? But it's, I, you know, my brother went to Duke. He's a Duke basketball fan. So I associate that blue with Carolina blue there.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, like you say, he's got a serious look on his face and he's got the boxing gloves, but he's still essentially a Bulldog character, which, you know, which smacks of minor league baseball fun. So
yeah,
that cross, you know, if you talk about, there's a spectrum from serious to goofy. I often say wacky. I like your term goofy there. That's a fun one. The name Knockouts is already kind of serious. So mm-hmm. the visual brand is where you had the opportunity to introduce the more sort of fun aspect of that. Obviously, having a dog in the logo is, you know, something that is good, wholesome minor league baseball fun. How was it that you arrived at this character?
Yeah, that's a good question. A dog was something that I landed on pretty early on with the team. We didn't necessarily want to do a human like perspective on the logo, because we didn't want it to, like, you know, there's a lot of boxing or either direction, whether it be the Knockouts or the Chowderheads. We didn't want to like hone in on one specific type of person, right? We didn't want to look at like a certain identity that we were highlighting as like the logo of the team. And so that kind of took out humans a little bit. We were like, yeah, let's stay away from that. The first dog we went with was actually a Boston Terrier. That was where I had started the process. And it made sense because Brockton is just outside of Boston and kind of servicing that whole region. It made sense. There was a little bit of challenge there as well, with like color issues, mm-hmm. things like that. Like Boston Terriers are all black. So I was struggling a little bit with that. That shifted into, what if we actually, when we made the shift over to Knockouts, what if we did a boxer, like the breed boxer, because it made a lot of sense. And even then, I don't even know if I could put my finger on it. That was a little bit of a struggle too. It just felt like it wasn't working the way that I wanted to. We had this idea of like a very straight on view of a dog, and not that I couldn't achieve that with a boxer, but I wanted to add a little bit more robustness to it. And a bulldog just made a ton of sense. It has this like very, I think the team called it out in sort of that infographic that they put out with the press release, but has this kind of like bullish, you know, feature about it. It's kind of a tough nature, this idea of like a Knockouts, right? You think bulldogs, you think tough, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Knowing that like bulldogs, not that they're overdone in sports, but it's super common. It's not crazy uncommon, but we weren't going with a bulldog moniker, right? And so it was easier to get away with doing a bulldog.
Right.
And then kind of the boxing gloves had to make an appearance with the name Knockouts, right? And so what I loved about how it all came together was I tried to do this very geometric bulldog, very round, like you can really see like the circular shape of it. Like it has this small chin, right? And the roundness of the boxing gloves, it all sort of came together at that point. And so it started out, you know, moving away from humans into dogs. Now which dog breed do we go with? Let's influence that with design, but let's influence that with also the region and what makes sense. And I really feel like we landed somewhere that we were really pleased with.
One of the things I really like about the decision to go with this bulldog is, even though you can't really see it in this logo, the, you know, the primary logo just has the head and then the gloves, there is a version of the logo where you see the dog's full body, but everyone knows that bulldogs are short, right? Like, so he's got kind of this sort of underdog quality about him, right? Like he's got to be tough because he's short in this world of, and when, you know, when you mentioned like the boxer as a possibility, you know, that the boxers are tall, right? Like they're sort of tall and lanky and they sort of feel like athletes. So this bulldog really feels like, you know, to coin a phrase, feels like an underdog to me. One of the reasons I'm interested in the process here is just because you didn't have a lot of time to work on this, right? Like when, mm-hmm. you know, these logos often take months and months and then and sometimes years to develop, and there's focus groups and there's different versions and there's different you know, paths that you can take and you know, concepts to explore. Obviously, with the team changing course, you know, after they had already settled on a name that you were working on, how does that affect you as a designer when, okay, now all of a sudden we have a really compressed schedule here for this? Are there things that you have to, are there steps that you have to forego, or is it just you do it all, but you do it all quicker?
It probably falls somewhere in between, actually, a little bit. It's just, I think we have to be a little more ruthless in the process, right? We can't just explore and explore and explore and see what sticks and hope that it works. It was more of a, I did the, it's like pretty standard exploration as to what I would do, did a lot of sketching, that kind of stuff. But as soon as I landed on something that had legs, I ran with it. Whereas, you know, in a longer timeline, I can explore something might have legs. Okay, I'll put it to the side. Now let's see what else has legs. With this process, it was like, all right, first thing, when it starts to feel good, let's roll with it.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of what we had to do for this. It was nailed down. Okay, we got the new name. All right, what are we going to do? Let's figure it out. And then let's start putting it, you know, let's push pixels. Let's actually start to get it in a digital format, start to tweak things how we want to. So a little, it's just more condensed, I would say, a little more ruthless.
Sure. You mentioned that the team put out some infographics, and that's always fun for me. Like, you know, when I write about these for sportslogos.net, you know, for the team to actually put out, you know, here are the colors that we chose and here's, you know, the significance of this sort of thing. In this one in particular, you know, I was interested in the colors, obviously not the Pantone colors that you were working with, right? But the jab, hook, overhand, bell, and canvas, which to my eye, I would call like a navy blue, a Carolina blue, an orangey red, a kind of orangey yellow, and then canvas, you know, being sort of a warm neutral. What was there something specific that went into those color choices beyond they are, you know, complementary pairings that work real well together?
Yeah, we actually spent color took up a big portion of the creative process, I think more than I actually think it normally would for team branding. We worked with a lot of different colors, just trying to nail down like what makes sense. Again, a lot of it was just based on the region. What makes sense for the region? What are they going to resonate with? All that kind of thing. And so once we made the shift, the moniker makes a, you know, changes with that too. We shifted away from the Chowderheads name. So we had a color palette for the Chowderheads, but we did shift away from that. So part of it was trying to figure out what makes sense with the Knockouts name. So things like, you know, it's going to be boxing centric. It's going to have a bulldog, all that kind of stuff. There are going to be some specific, you know, colors in there. Now we get to dictate those values too, obviously. One of the big considerations was Brockton being known as the City of Champions. It has this very historic tie to it. I mean, these world champion boxers from decades ago were, you know, born and raised there, big boxing training culture there, all that stuff. So it was very specifically intentionally historic feeling. That was kind of the vintage is a good way to put it, I guess, timeless in any of those kind of attributes that you want to, you know, put on it. But yeah, that's why we landed on this sort of off-white color. Instead of going pure white, it was this off-white canvas color. That's why the navy and the sort of red orange color feel a little bit less, there's not a ton of vibrancy there. It's a little bit subdued, that kind of thing. All to give it this very sort of timeless nature. We explored some options where it was very punchy, very vibrant, very in your face. That didn't feel like it was necessarily working with the sort of the timeless feel that we were going for. And so the combination of this historic city hosting this brand new team, we want to make ties with that. It is boxing centric, right? And so we wanted to make ties with like red, white, and blue, kind of ties into that a little bit. And then also sort of this South Shore, like beach vibes, a little bit of these more subdued colors played a role in that too. So it was a number of things, but yeah, it was very intentionally a little bit more subdued, a little bit more historic, vintage, timeless feeling.
One of the things we haven't talked about yet on this episode is this type that you created, you know, very much not a traditional baseball script, right? Like this big sans serif bold with the rivets, has this sort of metallic feeling about it. What did that type mean to you as you were creating it? What was the significance of that specific look?
Yeah, there was two things that played into that big time. The first being, again, I don't want to keep beating the regional drum, but that played a big role. We really wanted, while it's always fun to create a brand that resonates with an audience nationally, people in Nevada weren't necessarily going to see a New England Knockouts game, right? And so we really did want to like make ties to the region. And so part of that is the South Shore industrial kind of nature of the area. We wanted to just tie to that subtly. And I think that we did that really successfully. It was, again, these big, bold letter forms, you know, super subtle rivets, that kind of idea. It adds to the toughness a little bit too. So we're trying to combine historic and vintage and tough with the bulldog, tough with the rivets, that kind of metal feel, but also like the goofiness of it being a minor league baseball logo, right? And so it was kind of trying to tie all those things together. So that played a big role in how we developed the logotype. And then it's also a little different. Maybe people won't pick up on this. I picked up on it because I created it, but a lot of baseball logos, especially in the minor leagues, leverage like a white typeface or like a white logotype with like a dark outline. And there's sometimes like a different colored keystroke around that. We just went straight to a dark logotype, which is the adjoining keystroke around the entire logo. And I really like what that did in terms of like integrating the bulldog with the logotype.
Yeah.
Because they're both sort of founded in this like navy blue, right? The navy blue is comprising all the details of the bulldog, but it's also comprising the majority of the logotype. And it really had this nice connection being made there. So those two specific things that led us down that direction.
I'll tell you, the type, you know, I love talking about type on this podcast. And, you know, I think that very often the focus obviously is where it should be on the characters and the nickname. Sure. And the stories that those tell. But I think the type always does such a good job of completing the effect. And honestly, when I saw this logo, right, like it wasn't just a bulldog with boxing gloves, right? The fact that that type had the rivets and the sort of metallic feeling about it really created this effect for me of like, this bulldog boxer is like hanging out on the docks out. You know, I don't know if Brockton has docks, right? But like it's hanging out on the docks and there's a bunch of like, you know, sheet metal like buildings behind it or something like that. I don't know. It certainly contributed to that effect. So, you know, that sounds like what is what you were attempting to do, and it really landed. So
good. Yeah. This sort of kind of gritty nature, of like real tough. Yeah.
Absolutely. And now people who live in the Boston area can tell me whether there are docks in Brockton or not. So before I let you go, I want to ask you about this. One of the other marks that you created, we talked about already, you had the full body version of the dog. There is a text-based one where it says the City of Champions. But the one I want to ask you about is, you know, since we're talking about this typography, you've pulled out the letter K with the rivets. And then you have the boxing bell there, and it forms the letters KO. That's a fun, clever use of type as image there, and it adds a lot to this suite of logos. What was the thinking behind that brand?
Yeah, that's a great question. We knew we wanted to have some kind of letter mark. I mean, it's almost tradition for you have to pretty much have a letter mark, right? And when you're making a baseball brand, I mean, a hat emblem that leverages some kind of letter forms paired together that you know showcase where the team is from or whatever. So in thinking, I originally was exploring like an NEK. It's the three letters that it starts with, right? So I started on that path and I was like, what are we doing here? I mean, Knockouts is literally so commonly condensed down to KO, right? When somebody gets knocked out, they get KO'd, right? And I was like, we have to incorporate that somehow. It also made it easier. It's shorter, two letters from three letters. And I think it would resonate like instantly with people. Rather than any K, it could be read as like neck or whatever. And I didn't want that. So KO made a ton of sense. I didn't want to just leverage, you know, the K and the O from the logotype and just put them together. I really wanted to further emphasize this kind of boxing heritage there. And I actually don't know if bells are, I know there is a bell to denote the end and beginning of a round still. I don't know if it's literally still a bell though. I'm actually not certain, but
it's like a wave file on somebody's MacBook.
It could be. For all I know, they hit a button and it just makes a digital sound nowadays. But I wanted to incorporate a real bell. It made a lot of sense. You know, when we did land officially on the name Knockouts, started to look for boxing imagery that I could tie in. That's maybe not just boxing gloves, right? That was going to be taken care of. And so the bell made a ton of sense. It naturally aligned with the O of Knockouts, which is, you know, commonly shortened to KO. And then from there, it was just a really simple, let's put these things together, create a really simple but detailed boxing bell and put those things together. So that's been met with a lot of good reception too, which has been awesome.
Awesome. Well, it's a really terrific brand, and I'm so glad to have met you and have gotten to talk about it. Where can people find the work that you do online, Grant?
Well, that is a good question, because the work was a big undertaking, right? But simultaneously, my website is currently not functioning. So I've been in the process of getting that back up. So hopefully here in a couple of weeks. But in the meantime, you can find me I post work on Twitter, on Instagram, X, if we call it Twitter X now. I don't actually know what we call it, but
everyone I know is still just calling it Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter, Instagram. I'm still on Dribbble, for as much of a dying platform as that is. People can find me there. But all that to say, hopefully here soon, I'll have my website back up. So just Grant O'Dell Design, you'll be able to find me pretty easily on any of those platforms.
Okay, and that'll all be in the show notes here. By the time this episode drops, hopefully your website will be back up and running. So we'll put that in the show notes. Grant, thanks so much. It was a pleasure to meet you, and I look forward to speaking to you again on the podcast.
Yeah, Paul, I appreciate it. I hope to talk to you again soon.
All right, everyone, welcome back. It is time once again for Studio Simon Stumpers. Dan Simon of Studio Simon, prolific designer, creator of so many minor league baseball logos, and regular weekly participant on this podcast. I don't want to say guest because you're not a guest. It's kind of our podcast now. Dan, good morning. How are you?
I am fantastic. I am really looking. I look forward to every Stumper we do, but this one... This one's a particularly fun one. So I'm really looking forward to getting into this one. You want to get started right away?
Let's get started. There's a lot of fun details about this logo, and the team did a great job putting out all of their explanations of their design choices and their fun color names. And Grant and I had a good conversation about how come they chose a bulldog specifically. And so, yeah, this is a fun brand.
Speaking of Grant, Grant got in touch with me 8 years ago. He wanted to get into sports branding, and he contacted me, he emailed me, and, you know, asked if I would, you know, take some time and talk with him, which we did. And he kept in touch with me a little bit afterwards. He would go on baseball road trips, not unlike your baseball paloozas, and he would do what back then people called zines, which is short for magazines, mm-hmm. that chronicled his trip. And he's a graphic designer, so they were very well designed, and they had photographs of him and his friend on going to different ballparks. And it was very well designed. And each time he sent me one of those zines, I remember receiving two of them. Fast forward to several weeks ago, and I see this logo for the New England Knockouts, and it was, pun intended, it was a knockout. I really liked it. And when it was unveiled, I didn't know who did it. But then I'm trying to think, did I ask you and you did some digging?
Yeah. Because the team, I mean, one of the things that I like about doing this podcast is I like highlighting the work that designers are doing. And when a team unveils a logo without saying who the designer is, and I'm covering it for sportslogos.net, I like to be able to say who the designer is, because that's, you know, often the designers are the unsung heroes in this, in these projects. And so when you prompted me with that, when you said, hey, who designed this logo, I was able to get the information directly from the team, though it was not in any of their press materials that they had put out. I had to just call the team and say, hey, I need this answer.
Yes. And then, if I remember correctly, I gave you his contact information because I had it.
Well, I actually did get that information from the team, but okay. Grant told me after the fact, this is a little behind the scenes here, but he found it, I think, kind of charming that you reached out to him to congratulate him on this logo by responding to an 8-year-old email. So you still had this email thread from 8 years ago.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was actually really cool. So he contacted me 8 years ago, wanting to get into the biz. And then I see this logo that I thought was really good, and it turned out to be his. I really like what he did with this. So, and it leads to a fun Studio Simon Stumper. So, one of the neat things about boxing, you know, we've talked about nicknames a bit, probably on some of the Stumpers that we've done before. I kind of remember talking about, you know, some of the neat nicknames in baseball, but boxing is really has a history of great nicknames for boxers. And it seems like every single boxer has to have a nickname in boxing, whereas not every baseball player has to have a nickname. But you hear a ring announcer announce the particular participants in that night or day's bout, and they seem to always have nicknames and colorful nicknames in the past. Rocky Marciano, who's one of the boxers that is the reason for the name New England Knockouts, because he was born in Brockton, Massachusetts, where this team is located. He was the Brockton Blockbuster. That was his nickname. Jack Dempsey was the Manassas Mauler. Larry Holmes, all of these guys were heavyweight champions. Larry Holmes was the Easton Assassin. Now, there was a boxer who in 1975 fought Muhammad Ali for the World Heavyweight Championship. And his name was Chuck Wepner. And he was the inspiration for Rocky. He was Sylvester Stallone's inspiration for Rocky that led to, you know, one of the greatest franchises in cinema history. So our Studio Simon Stumper today asks, pay attention here.
Okay.
If there was a minor league team whose brand identity was based on Chuck Wepner's nickname, what would the name of that team have been? Would it have been A, the Millville Maniacs, B, the Bayonne Bleeders, or C, the Dingle Dingalings? I also want to mention that even though only one of these choices, one of these three choices, is the correct answer, all three of them have legitimate connections to actual boxer nicknames. So okay. Neither one of the two not answers are just completely made up.
Okay.
And I'll explain it after you make your guess.
Okay. Of those three, Bleeder is the one that jumped out at me because it ended in an ER. It was, I don't know what part of speech that would be, right? But it was a verb, not a noun.
Words that end in ER.
So maniac and ding-a-lings are both nouns, and bleeder, I guess, is a version of a verb. We need Grammar Girl back again. For that reason, I was leaning towards bleeder. Ding-a-ling is just funny enough and wacky enough, though, that I think that would be, you wouldn't have just put that, I don't think you would have just put ding-a-ling in there without it, you know, being one to strongly consider. So once again, I'm sure that the maniac is probably the one that is the answer because I'm considering both bleeder and ding-a-ling. I am going to go, bleeder was my first instinct. I'm going to go away from my first instinct and go with ding-a-lings.
Tell your listeners what I just did.
Dan did a classic hat removal and facepalm because bleeders is the answer, and I went with ding-a-lings.
Chuck Wepner was indeed the Bayonne Bleeder. In his fight with Muhammad Ali, the reason he was the inspiration for Rocky was he was kind of just what people would describe as a club fighter. You know, he was not really known as a contender. He was how they picked Chuck Wepner, to fight Muhammad Ali, I have no idea, but it might've been like somebody at the last minute they were going to have couldn't fight. And it's like, they had to get somebody but he was famous for bleeding. He could take a punch. As a matter of fact, he went virtually the distance with Muhammad Ali. It was a 15 round championship prize fight. And he made it up until 19 seconds to go in the final round before they called it on a TKO, technical knockout. Early in the fight, Muhammad Ali opened up multiple cuts on Chuck Wepner's face. He was bleeding all over the place.
So he got the nickname for being the person who was doing the bleeding.
Yes, he was not. He did not cause the bleeding. He was the bleeder. And I read some stuff about him when looking up, you know, information for this. And he claims to have had well over 300 stitches in his face over his career. For the Muhammad Ali fight alone, he had something like 60 or 70 stitches. I should mention, my mom was born in and grew up in and went to high school in Bayonne, New Jersey, and went to the same high school as Chuck Wepner, although they were 5 years apart, so they wouldn't have gone at the same time. But so when my grandmother was in the hospital, my cousin Brett went to the hospital with his parents to see my grandmother on one particular day, and they were in the elevator with somebody. And when they got out, my cousin said to my uncle Lenny, he said, "Dad, that was Chuck Wepner." So he was in the hospital. Now, whether he was in the hospital visiting somebody or whether he was in the hospital having his face repaired from whatever his most recent fight was, my cousin spent and uncle and aunt spent an elevator ride with Chuck Wepner. So I mentioned that the other two had connections to nicknames. So I mentioned the Millville Maniacs. Now, by the way, I know that I mentioned this previously on a Stumper. One of the greatest baseball players of this generation, Mike Trout, is the Millville Meteor. But there is a boxer, current boxer, from Millville, New Jersey, was not the Millville something, but he's Thomas LaManna, known as Thomas Cornflake LaManna. So there's another colorful nickname for a boxer from Millville. So that's why I named this team the Millville Maniacs.
Okay.
There was also a boxer named Darnell Wilson. Was a boxer. I believe he was a boxer in the early 2000s, so not all that long ago. Darnell Wilson's nickname is Darnell Ding-a-ling Man Wilson. And there is actually a city in the United States, in Idaho specifically, named Dingle, Idaho. So there could have been a baseball team named the Dingle Ding-a-lings. But unfortunately, Darnell Ding-a-ling Man Wilson did not live in Dingle.
Dan, you worked hard on this one. This is some of your best work on this Stumper. There's a lot to unpack here. One of the things that I think about, like, as we're talking about this, you know, the fact that Chuck Wepner was fighting Muhammad Ali for the title in the first place and sort of questioning how we arrived in that situation kind of makes me think, what if Major League Baseball did that, right? Like, what if, you know, the Texas Rangers won the American League last year, and then the Diamondbacks couldn't make it, and so Major League Baseball was just like, well, let's put the Reds in there, maybe.
that's kind of how it was. Hey, by the way, listeners, I implore you, invite you, whatever. Google Chuck Wepner, do an image search, and take a look at him. The most unlikely looking boxer to actually, for a movie, perfect central casting, but for an actual real heavyweight championship bout, the most unlikely looking participant, he knocked Muhammad Ali down. Now, Muhammad Ali claims Wepner stepped on his foot, and there is a picture that kind of looks like he's stepping on his foot. Knocked him down anyway. So that's his claim to fame. Not only did he almost go the distance against Muhammad Ali, but he knocked the guy down.
Pretty good.
Arguably the greatest heavyweight of all time. So great. It's just such a great story. Well, obviously it led to Rocky. So there's the proof's in the pudding right there. It was a great story.
Dan, as always, we learn so much, and now we know there's a town called Dingle and a boxer whose nickname was Dingling.
Can you come up with another great name for a team in Dingle?
Just the Dingleberries.
Yes, the Dingleberries.
Dingleberries. A little on the nose.
Think about anthropomorphizing that. Okay, on that note, we've evolved here. So
go find Dan's work on Instagram at @studio_Simon. Dan, thank you, and we'll see you again next week. And it's, at the time of this recording, the very cusp of baseball season. There are road trips and minor league baseball and all sorts of exciting things on the horizon. Looking forward to getting to see you in person again later on this summer. And looking forward to the baseball-iest time of the year.
And to the next Stumper. And I will see you then.
See you next week.